John Reardon. I was giving John a hard time because in his bio he put some hard Spanish words for me to pronounce, so this might be interesting. John Reardon is Director of Community Partnerships at Boston Children's Hospital. Previously, he served as Director of Civic Affairs for Blue Cross Blue Shield, Chief of Staff to the Mayor of Boston, and Director of Housing and Economic Development for Inquilinos Boricuas and Acción. How to do? He is trained. Okay, but remind me what the actual translation is.
Puerto Rican Tenants in Action.
Puerto Rican Tenants in Action. He's trained as a city planner, and having worked in both community development and community health, he's glad to see that his two communities appear to have discovered one another. So welcome, John.
Thank you. Just out of curiosity, show of hands, how many folks work in hospitals? They're all in that side of the room. You guys cluster. Community health centers? Couple. And how many folks think of themselves as primarily working in community health or public health? And how many folks would think of themselves as working primarily in community development? Wow, this is impressive. So, yes, the two communities are beginning, and I'd like to say it appears as though we're dating, the community development world and the community health world. I think it's a really important time for that to take place with a lot of the changes that are happening through the Affordable Care Act and opportunities that that presents for some cross-sector working together. The place that Monica was good enough to try and describe was kind of a community that I think a lot of the folks that come out of my background can't hear me. Is that better? Inquilinos Boricuas en Acción is a purpose-built community in Boston that was built by and for low-income Latino residents of the neighborhood. It was designed by them and it was built around a plaza, two-family houses, casitas that resembled a community that many of the folks might have come from. We had ground floor commercial space where we put in place a credit union for folks that wanted to improve their financial literacy. We had an early childhood program. We had after-school programs. We didn't design a health center to be there, but there was one immediately adjacent. So it's the kind of community that I think a lot of the folks that are looking at this from the community development side would see as a promising future. It's hard to do that if you're not in the business of developing new communities, though. So what I'm about to describe is a little bit more of a what we've tried to do in a community that's already been established. One thing I'd like to say is when I first started working at Children's, I went in to get my badge, my identification badge made up, and the guy who was taking the picture said, "Do I want any credentials after my name?" And I said, I didn't think that a master of city planning would translate, so I said, no, I'm going to try and get by on charm. And he looked at me with disbelief and said, "I think you may have picked the wrong environment." Those of you in the hospital world will appreciate this. So my hope is that as time goes on, the disciplines get it familiar enough with each other that those from my side don't feel uncomfortable with presenting their background, and folks from the other side actually see the value in the collaboration. So with that, what we've done is partner with a community development corporation, the other CDC, in a community that abuts Children's Hospital. And as you can see, it's the Fenway neighborhood is about 5% of the total population of Boston. But it is wider and more affluent than the rest of the city. The third column is the housing, the 600 or so units that the Fenway Community Development Corporation, our partners, have developed. And it more closely reflects the demographics of the city, but as you can see, it has a very disproportionate share of the low-income community in that neighborhood. The Fenway is a very small neighborhood, 1.24 square miles. It is also, though, the home of 13 colleges and universities, Harvard Medical School, Boston University, Northeastern University. It's the home of 7 museums and other cultural institutions, which we include Fenway Park as the oldest ballpark in the country. And because it houses a team that went from last place to first place to last place in such a short time, it's also thought to be the home of the largest emotional roller coaster in the country as well. There's also 7 hospitals, many of them very well known, Brigham and Women's Hospital, Beth Israel Hospital, Children's Hospital. So it's an interesting neighborhood with lots of resources and lots of challenges. Boston is often referred to as a collection of neighborhoods masquerading as a city, and you can see why, and the Fenway is one of the smaller neighborhoods. So a little bit of history as to how our partner got started. In the 70s, when cities were going through a downturn, the federal government came in with programs to try and revitalize cities. The Urban Renewal Plan was one. And I think it was well-intentioned, but it had some design flaws and unexpected consequences. So what it enabled local municipalities to do was go in and identify areas as blighted and then clear the areas with the intention of building new housing for the people that were there. The design flaw was that it didn't have any a programmatic way to ensure that the people that were there got a chance to come back. So a lot of it was just bulldozing neighborhoods and moving people out in large numbers. Some of the neighborhoods caught on and were able to come up with ways to try and get involved in the process. Fenway did, but only after 300 units of low-income housing had been demolished. What they did is bring a lawsuit that said for the urban renewal plan in our neighborhood to go forward, we would like to be able to have a body that's made up of a representative group of residents so that we can have a say in how the plan is, how the plan unfolds. And they did that for a few years, but they found themselves still reacting to plans. So over time, what they decided to do was start a community development corporation where they could be involved in both the planning but also be involved directly in the development of affordable housing. So over the succeeding years, they developed 600 units of affordable housing, housing about 1,500 people. They developed an urban village plan to do a couple of things. One is to promote mixed income housing and to sort of mitigate the expansion plans of institutions like mine, which also were cutting into the availability of housing in general in the neighborhood. They worked with existing residents to promote owner occupancy. They developed a couple of parks, and they started doing job creation. So the intention was to go in and stabilize the neighborhood by providing some affordable housing and then to provide services that would help people improve their lives. Going back to why the neighborhood in general is a little whiter and more affluent than the rest of the community, has a lot to do with the fact that it is surrounded by all of those institutions, so it's a very desirable place for the folks that are working in those institutions, and there's a large number of transient student population. So while Fenway CDC works in the social determinants of health, Children's Hospital, for those who may be familiar with it, it's well known for being a tertiary hospital that does a lot of high-end medical care. What's less known, and even in Boston, is that it's the number one provider of care to low-income children in the city of Boston. It's half the kids from Boston that are hospitalized come to Children's, and in the state, we're the third most reliant hospital on Medicaid. So we're serving a lot of the same kids that live in the Fenway CDC's housing development. Prior to about 2011, and this is to get at what we have come up with as a plan for trying to coordinate care in the community, but we've had to go through some contortions to get there. So prior to 2011, Children's partnered with the Fenway CDC but mostly through kind of a traditional community benefits approach. We provided operating money, about $15,000 a year. We supported their annual fundraiser, but didn't have much engagement. We knew they were important to the neighborhood. We just didn't know how to work with them on anything. In 2011, though, an opportunity presented itself. I don't know if folks have the same thing. In Massachusetts, if a hospital makes a significant capital investment, a new building or new equipment, it goes through an approval process, which is intended to make sure that there's not an overabundance of any one thing in any one part of the state, but it also requires that 5% of the capital investment be reinvested in community health initiatives. It makes for an interesting discussion because it has some real opportunities to do some interesting work, but it is a bit of a negotiation. So the money comes from the hospital, so the hospital feels like it belongs to the hospital and should have some influence on where it goes. The state Department of Public Health is the regulating body, so they feel that they have some influence on where it goes. They have set up community-based organizations to help them direct where the funds go, participants of which are organizations that are often also looking for the funds. So it's a dance to try and come up with something that satisfies everybody. In this case, I think we did a good job of doing so. We required that the participants, because of the nature of Children's Hospital main business being children, that participants that would be funded through this process should be organizations that primarily serve children and families. We also were able to secure an agreement that because we were just empowered to fund them for work that they were already doing, we asked that they participate twice a year in a learning community where they would come together and talk to each other about what their individual projects were, with the idea of looking across the table to see if there were opportunities to collaborate among each other and collaborate with the healthcare system. The good news was that this was a big enough building that we could fund 12 such organizations over 7 years. And several interesting things have come out of this, but the one that I'm talking about today is the collaboration with the Fenway CDC, which was, at the time, was losing its employment specialist, somebody who was helping residents find employment. And they came to us seeking funds to continue that position part-time. And what we said was, we have an opportunity to continue it full-time, but why don't we look at it more broadly? Why don't we look at it as a community health worker position with an emphasis on employment opportunities? And they were more than happy to do that, and that's where we have been spending our time. So the goals were to improve the health and well-being through access to health, social services, and employment, mostly around information. So the nature of this didn't allow us to do a rigorous study, but it did allow us to look at how we might see whether improved connections could be made to organizations that might help people improve the quality of their life. So we did a needs assessment together. We decided that because a lot of the residents in this community didn't reflect the broader community, they didn't run into each other at the store. The store was a Whole Foods market, which was a little out of their price range, so there weren't a lot of opportunities for folks to come together. So we consciously put together efforts to build community through having sort of common events. We started a family health education series, which I was very surprised at just what enthusiasm it was met by. A lot of parents with a lot of teenagers were interested in teen health, and but there was a lot of interest in asthma. We brought an asthma nurse out several times, but I'm told that all the materials that she's provided now get distributed among the residents themselves. So it's sort of a different kind of empowerment. and health and social service referrals. There is a big emphasis still on employment. The woman who was originally in this position that was going to lose the funding, I like to say, was a really talented employment specialist who now speaks fluent public health. So we tried to set up some output, some goals to see if we could make some inroads with the population that we were working with. So it was to increase membership, to get more people involved, to get them involved in some of these community building activities, get some folks to these community health workshops, and to connect it to one or more services. We also were looking to see if some of these folks would participate in structured employment training programs, and we tried to set up a structure through the hospital and working with the other major employers in the neighborhood to develop a bit of a pipeline for folks to get employed within the hospitals and the other institutions. So some of the community building involved setting up a parent advocacy group that met monthly. We had block parties. The CDC held its first ever community health fair on a day that it was about 150 degrees out, and people still came out in large numbers. The workshops and activities we did, some of which the hospital sponsored, but to her credit, the woman who was working as the service coordinator identified other groups that could come in and provide information that responded to the needs of the community that she was serving. So there were a number of things, including a walking group. We worked with her a little bit on some of the medical world connections, but again, to her credit, she was very active in educating herself about what some of the other resources were for the population that she was serving. So she has made inroads in a lot of different areas, including just sort of basic services, fuel, food, financial literacy. And then in her role as trying to get folks employed, she was able to connect folks with English as a second language courses, including and up to several folks she worked with to get them back into college. So they've done some GEDs, and some of them actually went back to college. So, quick results. As you can see, we were able to meet most of the goals that we had set out for each other. These are outputs again, these are numbers, but we thought this was sort of a positive sign that making these kind of connections at least has the potential to improve the quality of life for the folks that are living in this neighborhood. And so the conclusions we have developed so far are that the kind of service coordination that does include access to information on everything from health to social services to employment training can have an impact on a community. It requires, in order to do it well, somebody who has very deep roots and understanding of the community, and I have to say, in her role as an employment counselor, our intrepid service coordinator has knocked on doors at 8 o'clock in the morning to make sure that somebody gets to their job on time. So somebody who's got that kind of connection and dedication, I think, is essential to make this work. And I do think because we're often dealing with communities that are already established, not these sort of purpose-built communities that I was describing earlier, this has the potential to look for opportunities to better coordinate the community development and the community health world. So for those who've worked in as community health workers, this is probably not a surprise. There is, I think, one of the ways to make sure that this is continued is a sort of an elevation of the role and recognition that community health workers play. And the other challenge that we see is sort of reconciling populations. So at a hospital, the population tends to be the patients that we're serving. In public health, a population tends to be a community, geographic or otherwise. So when you get to the point of who's covering it and how things get paid for, there are still some issues to be worked out. And funding would be the the last thing. I do think we're at a really important time because the Affordable Care Act does allow for some of this to happen. There is a provision, I guess, in Medicaid that community health workers can be funded if they are contracted with a physician. What I think is still a challenge from somebody who's working in a hospital is I do think that the integration that's going on now is more vertical. It's looking at primary care as it connects to subspecialists. There's still a lot of room to educate everybody about horizontal integration, which is the kind we're talking about here, how to connect to other kinds of services that can improve the quality of life for folks and improve population health. But I think it's going to be a challenge to try and get those two pieces together. And I'd like to end with a quote here. So factors such as educational attainment, income, access to healthy food, and the safety of a neighborhood tend to correlate with the individual health outcomes in that neighborhood. Because these factors are linked to economic health as well as physical health, healthcare professionals and community development organizations are seeking new opportunities for coordination and cooperation in low-income communities. And that was said by that public health advocate and part-time chair of the Federal Reserve Bank, Ben Bernanke. Thanks.